Foden Beat Show, a weekly podcast about the 2024 Star Wars Armada Vassal World Cup. Thanks for joining us.
Hello and welcome back to yet another episode. I believe this is episode 7, according to our notes, of the Foden Beat Show. Thank you for the lack of a lot of pitchforks last week. So I think we said 2 weeks ago, Armchair was on vacation. It's his fault. And I don't feel like I can carry a podcast entirely by myself. Armchair's in this really interesting position where everybody wants him. How does that feel, Armchair?
I mean, it's good to know you're wanted, even if you're wanted dead, you know? But I mean, to be fair, I think you could pull off a podcast. I think you could do it. I think you just got to try. You got to put yourself out there.
I think I could. Whether it would be useful information or not is a very different question. Fair. With us tonight is the king of jank, Louis Andre. Welcome to the podcast.
Hi, guys.
Hey.
How are you doing tonight?
I'm kind of just okay, but I'm going to make sure to give you a good show, man.
Yeah. Yeah. Just on that, all three podcast people tonight are a little sick. It sounds like Louis Andre might be the sickest of us all, but it's that season.
It's not a competition. Right? It's not a competition.
We don't need to compare suffering.
It's not the sicky World Cup.
Yes. All right. So for tonight, our topic is going to be jank and dark horses in the VWC. As well, I am super excited to ask Louis Andre about his experiences with Obi-Wan in the Second Chance event, even though that's not on the official agenda. Obi-Wan has long been my love, and I want to hear about him. But let's start off with our regular Foden Beat interview. Louis Andre, how long have you played Armada?
Well, I do play it since the very beginning of the Corset. So, yeah, the little Nebulon and the Corvette with the Victory was a great pleasure. Only that. And then I still play since. And after the first game, I just was hooked, like, deeply and super focused on how to perform and how to understand the game pretty well.
Have you ever taken a break in all that time, like an extended break?
Ooh, like 1 or 2 months, perhaps, after a good vassal, or even after the last world. It's like it just pimped me up to do more, while I was sure to needed a break. But nope, the game is just so fun that we just continue.
Nice. That's awesome. I hope to love almost anything other than my family that much. I had to put that in there. How did you come to find the game?
Well, at the beginning, it was my brother who bought the game, and I wasn't very interesting in it, to be fair, to be honest. And that's it. He asked me to play it, and I wasn't very in the mood, and I just start the game and understand the logic of the maneuver tool and all the side arc and stuff. And wow, what amazing concept of having two size of different type of unit. And yeah, it was the beginning.
Right on. Did you play any miniatures games or board games before that?
Only chess, if we can say that it is gaming.
I think we can.
Yeah,
I think we can.
Okay, so yeah. Chess and
I'm in for it.
And I try Age of Sigmar and stuff like that, and yeah, it's not like Armada.
No. Were you a Star Wars fan before you got into Armada?
Not that much, to be honest. Not that much. I do like...
I mean, honestly...
Yes?
Yeah, go ahead.
I do like some stuff of the universe, but I feel that sometimes the logic isn't really there, and it's... Nah, the critic is so easy, and and I try to put that on the side when I watch the new stuff, but it's always there, and yeah.
This sounds like you were not set up for success for enjoying this game. Like, you weren't much of a miniatures gamer, you weren't much of a board gamer, you didn't really love Star Wars. Like, now how did this all come together to make you love this game, or like pick it up and you know, it was your brother, but then I guess the rules had to entice you.
Well,
was there something else?
It's really the dynamic of the game, the way you play it as a first player or second player with the mission, and then the maneuver tool, and the fact that you build your whole army based on squadron and some limit and the admiral. So this is such a huge world of possibility, and it's the same feeling as the playing chess, as I can say, and without the obsession of the chess. Like, I had to stop playing chess because I went to bed and I woke up with chess in mind all the time, and it's not the same with Armada. So I'm fine now. I can play it again.
That's great. Yeah.
Yeah.
Armada as like a mental health break.
Indeed. And it's always a very great challenge too. So, a lot of fun.
Right on. How did you feel in your pod phase? You know, it was weeks ago, but, you know, was it a hard pod that you had?
Yeah. At the very beginning, I wasn't expecting that much challenge, but it starts so well. I mean, for having a great challenge, getting a 110, it's super cool to pump you up, and so I had to kick my ass to perform well, and I kind of did that against Geek and Formander. So Ironbound really kicked me pretty well with this super Matma, maybe more. So it was a very interesting game in which it started very badly with a bad hyperspace drop, where it teach me that I could not use my Nida ability on the Dictors, so I get all messed up just because of that. And then I fucked up my maneuver in front of the big thing, and I failed my mats, and he totally blew my two ship and gained a very great victory. Yep. And after that, the game versus Geek, it was pretty cool because it's such an unusual list to see, first of all, a Leia and a bunch of Nibelon like that. It's very interesting. It's like, I guess it's three Nibelon, one Hammerhead, one Pelta. And yeah, I had to go all in, and I just jumped straight in the middle and get kind of lucky in some positioning, and it went pretty well, in fact. So I got the 10-1 after that, and I just get my possibility to move on to the Swiss after that, and then I played a Formander Sloan list, and he played kind of pretty well because he split his list, his two ship on the right and the left side, so I only had to focus on one and could not get the other one. So I jumped the ISD out and gained what it need to finish with a good result in the pod. So it was a pretty good pod in which the dynamic between everyone was pretty great. Geek and Ironbound had a good meme fight, and so
amazing.
Yeah.
Were there any VWSU games that you thought were interesting?
I had a lot of hope. Are you talking about my own game or?
Or any's.
Okay, because I had a lot of hope of having a great time watching the game of Keylorn versus unskilled first officer, but we do know how it ended. But yeah, and
shame, shame.
But after that, it's sad to say, but I don't have that much good memories of the most of the game I watched, because I was super busy and could not watch a lot of them. But in some of my game, I start playing against Spike, and he had a nozzle list, which was the perfect, almost the perfect counter for my list. So it was pretty annoying to almost don't play with the advantage of an admiral, because Konstantin versus Ozel is such a waste of ability. And he also played super well, and he managed to destroy the Dictor, and I managed to kill enough stuff to get a little 6-5 by almost a margin of zero. So it was pretty cool the way it ended, because
it was 20 MOV. You did better than Kalorn.
Yeah, 20. But yeah. I remember a little something was pretty close to be a zero, because I got Gen done last or something like that, and then boom, it makes the 20 MOV difference. But I would have preferred to have the zero MOV, to be fair, because Armada now, after all those years of playing online like that, it's like always playing against a friend, and beating friends, it's not my goal in the game. So I'm always a little bit sad when I beat someone. So getting a 6-5, it's almost like not winning, and for the opponent not losing. So I was pretty happy with that little result. And then
back when I used to play Warhammer, I used to say a tie is the best result. It's everybody wins.
Exactly. Yeah. And after that, something pretty cool happened, because despite what I was thinking about the rule, I could face an Iron Bomb in the Swiss, because I was sure that the rule was like, you can face anyone you already face in your pod phase, but there was a glitch or something like that, and the rematch happened, and then I could have a good game against him and it ended with a great revenge for me, and only a 7-4, but still I had some fun beating the MC30 this time. Yeah,
it's nice to get a chance to get a bounce back game like that. Sometimes if you have a bad first match, it's like, okay, you know, shake it off, and then have another game, and it's like, you know, you're both ready and in it, and it feels good trading back and forth. So that's cool.
Yeah, exactly.
With that, I think it is time to talk about Jank.
Oh yeah,
Jank. So I mean, Jank and Dark Horses, because I guess the first question, what is Jank? Like, what? How would you, Louis André, so-called King of Jank? How would you define Jank?
Yeah, that's a good question. Jank is when everyone considers something very bad, and for me, it's like a good challenge to take that and bring that junk to a great level, because if it's not only about an official card or any upgrade card, and it's always fun to take all the little component of the game and try to figure out a good list and bring that thing to a very competitive level. And I think Jank can be everything, and many things that we can consider as Jank can have a good a prime time. Yeah.
Yeah, I guess, like, I mean, when I think of Jank, I usually think of, like, usually it's some sort of like overly complicated combo or Rube Goldberg machine type effect that could, like, you know, on paper could have this really powerful outcome, but typically just doesn't really go off as easily or as well as you would hope or expect. Like the overload pulse is kind of the classic example. And I mean, I've tried stuff where it's like, okay, I'm going to take Jonas and I'm going to take Warlord and I'm going to take QTCs and I'm going to, you know, stack all this damage and I'm going to be rolling all this dice and flipping to doubles and blowing things up. And it just kind of doesn't. Right. And then on the flip side, oh, sorry.
Or even like when I comment about Luminara, when you're like, are you playing Luminara or are you playing Armada? And I don't always know which one I'm playing in any moment.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause you've got so many like kind of checks and hoops and stuff to kind of consider as you go. Yeah. It's almost like a mini game. But then you've got other things, and, you know, Constantine with Phylons is kind of a good example, because it is, I mean, you can make the argument that Constantine just by his very existence is jank, because he's very difficult to use and use well. And he could theoretically have a really neat effect on the game, but doesn't always come off very well. But the Constantine and the Phylons is kind of, you know, kind of goes hand in hand, you would think, because it's all about controlling that speed aspect. So
indeed, it's Constantine all alone, it's not working. You can have a good gliss without any other kind of control. If you don't have a slicer tool or G8 over the top, it's so good. And at least at minimum one tractor beam on a large ship, Constantine could not really work, because it's so easy to just have a little navigate token and being able to change the speed like you want. So Constantine really need a huge setup to be powerful. And that's a great challenge. And I work a lot before arriving to a list that I consider enough competitive to be proud of bringing to a good tournament like Vassal World World Cup.
Yeah, this isn't something that you just kind of picked up and decided to do for memes or lols or anything. Like, you've played this list. Have you been playing it the whole year or like most of the year? Because I think you had something similar at the SLO, didn't you?
I did. Have exactly that list, yes. It's the I believe that it's perhaps the best form of the Constantine that I found, and I just really try to show the world how Constantine can be very strong and be proud of that, because winning with something that people consider as very bad, it's a lot of proud. So yeah, I bring that list to also make the people realize that, hey, things considered as bad can be very good and playable. So why don't having fun with them?
Yeah, I guess that's the bottom line, right? We all want to play stuff that we have fun with, and if, you know, obviously it's more fun to win than to lose, but even it can even be fun to lose sometimes if you have fun doing it, if you get to get your combos off. So you being able to do both is great. And especially, like you said, with that challenge level, that anchor, I suppose you could say, of trying to find a way to make that work. And I mean, the other thing too, is that it's awesome that people like you and there's other people out there are taking good hard looks at these less played, less used, less loved cards and combos. And, you know, just throwing some brain at them and seeing what they can find out, and you know, and it's great to see some success with it, and I hope that inspires some people to take a try.
Yeah, indeed.
I'm going to be inspired to play Obi-Wan.
Because Obi-Wan can be a lot of fun. If you want to talk about Obi-Wan right now, I'm all in. I can, because damn, I played in the second. The Vassal World Cup second chance, just because of that Kenobi list, and it was such a lot of fun to arrive in front of the opponent with that and realize that they they can do almost anything against the Venator because it's just too defensive. And most of the time, I don't know if you experience that in all your experience in the game, but every time you try to focus on the defensive aspect of a list, it's not very effective as much as an offensive aspect of a list. So I always try to find something very good in defense and never really succeed. But that time with Kenobi like that, having with a lot of protection expert and little gimmick to gain back shield and stuff, I finally was happy with the list, and it turned out to be a Kenobi, which was another not really loved admiral, and also a super fun list to play. Yeah,
he's got I briefly want to go through the highlights of this list. It's a Clam 1, a Venator 1, a Consular Armed, Pelta Transport, Anakin Axe, and 2 V-19s. He's got 2 Projection Experts. He's got SFAT, Shields to Maximum.
What?
Mercy Mission Implacable. I mean, there's a bunch of other stuff in there, but those are the highlights. Yeah.
Tranquility?
Nope.
No Tranquility.
No Tranquility.
That's a crutch.
No need of Tranquility there. So and that's it. It's the first time I see Shield to Maximum being very good somewhere because of the projection expert and Implacable. It means like they send their shield and Implacable can take damage from to the front, and all the ship lose shields, so they all can gain one back at the next round. So yeah, it's very good there.
That's super cool. And so I've been focused on Worlds Prep and on Vassal World Cup. I haven't been following the second chance very closely. How have you been doing there?
It's now over, and I had a lot of fun facing some great opponent. And if Sam beat Skycake 7-4, I may win. But that's only if he do a 7-4. Otherwise, Skycake gonna win that tourney. Or Sam, if he make an 8-3 or more. So I had to face Skycake, and he had such a strong list, a TF with lot of EPT. It's a Patriot Fist and a very tanky Providence. He was lucky to get the dice luck on the when we throw the dice, because we have the same build, and he was able to pick the second, so he turned out to be to have a little advantage about that. And I had some very good roll with his Patriot Fist and blow the Implacable ship pretty fast, and then everything blow up, and I kind of pretty deal many good casualty, but turned out he won a great I think it was a 7-4. And the first game, I sadly don't remember it. Damn. Ooh. And what else? I'm gonna have to, sorry guys, I'm gonna have to go back and watch the
go check the tape.
Yes.
No worries. I mean, it's a lot of game in a fairly short span of time, and I know
it is.
Some people are playing in both, and I can't even imagine. I have trouble getting my own beauty sleep between two podcasts and regular life. So, let's go. So, I mean, is it fair to say then that your like what drives you to Jank is the challenge, like. Not to say that you're like, oh, this game is too easy, I need more challenge, but is it like the that sort of tantalizing, you know, there's a nugget there, there's something that you can unlock or solve or something that kind of draws you in that direction?
Well, it's a good question, because it's also a question of challenge. I want to challenge myself to find something into all the possibility of the game, because you know when they come up with the rapid reinforcement, it or a new expansion, it take always like a whole year to explore the old possibility and stuff, and even after that we still continue to find other way to play the game, and it's always a question of finding something else, and also a question of the way I approach the game, because it's like I don't like to arrive with something that we can all consider as OP, and I don't want to offer a bad experience to my opponent, because I consider that my opponent are perhaps the best part of the game, and that's it. I really want them to have a good time, even if I'm the winner. So if I bring a list that can offer a good satisfaction, I'm consider that I'm already a winner like that. So, and yeah, I do really like the not playing the S tier, the E tier, and even the B tier. I really like to stay with the unaided, like in the society. I prefer the loser. I do prefer the loser. So
the underdog.
Underdog.
Yeah.
So now, I mean, clearly in your case, Jank is competitive. You've done very well with two commanders and two fleets that I raise a lot of eyebrows. And it's also been said, and to be fair, I think there's probably a lot of truth in the fact that sometimes it's not the fleet, it's the admiral, and a very skilled player can do pretty well with with almost anything that isn't, you know, purposely made to defeat yourself, you know. So having like yourself, the other people in the top eight, top four of these tournaments, you know, it's a lot of you people can take almost anything and do well with it. So for somebody who's like looking at playing and looking at some of these, you know, crazy combo wombos or what have you, or even like looking at a part of the game that kind of seems underserved, underplayed, underexplored, what kind of advice do you have for them in terms of like how to approach it, just in terms of like not only in terms of the mechanics of the game, but also, you know, it's hard as a player trying to do these things and succeed at them, so that you got to be prepared for that too, right?
Yeah, it's sure you need to practice a lot to understand the maneuver, because it's first of all a maneuver game. For me, I really see that way more as if I place my ship perfectly, it's gonna be way more effective than if I have an extra die to attack the opponent. So it's always like having a good plan and try to see not only the round there, but the second and the third round after the round you're playing. And you have to understand that if you add a yaw to your maneuver, it's gonna have a huge impact later in the game. So all those little things really can make a good difference, and it's a lot of practice before to arrive at that point. And it's a little bit why I really also like to play Jar'Jarod, even if he is like a super S tier guy. You can have so much fun to maneuver the ISD or any ship to a very weird spot that you don't usually see with any ship. So it's a good question of having a super good plan, seeing the way your opponent can beat you, just evade all the possibility of the conflict where you won't be winning, and almost all there. In fact, if you don't have the choice of being second or first and you have to go first, you do have to take also the risk sometime. if you want to win, you can just go away all the time like that, and you have to do the math and believe that your ship can stay the longer you estimate. And even if you messed up stuff, next game you will keep that in mind, and all your fail, you're gonna keep that in mind, and you're gonna bring them back to the table, and you're gonna learn about them, and maybe more that time your math's gonna be better, and you're gonna succeed to survive and to blow the stuff that you have to destroy. So it's like in everything, you have to learn by your mistake and not repeating them. It's like many times at the beginning, the squad game, it's a component of the game that I think many players don't master that much, and it's one of the most important part of the game for me, because it's where you have to micromanage stuff, to luck or to gain little advantage here and there, and you have to consider every component of your list as a super valuable part of your list. Otherwise, why do you have that there? Have them there, you know? So just don't send your stuff to die, and learn when to do the alpha strike or how to receive a good alpha strike. And with all those little steps, you will be able to become a better player. Yeah.
The squad, I think you're spot on with the squad. It's almost like a little tiny game of chess, almost within the bigger game, with all the, you know, the positioning and the you know, the setup and the feint and so on. So, it's a challenge that I face to this day. So let's take a look at some other, and so I want to be clear off the hop here too, that I don't consider jank, or the term jank, or this is a janky list. I don't consider that to be derogatory in the slightest. I don't think your list is garbage because it's janky, yours, Louis, or anybody's. I honestly admire people who go after those kind of things. And I think it's just super interesting to see the combos and the machinations that people can kind of get up to when they start, you know, trying to put these little machines together to pull off this crit or pull off this effect or what have you. I think that's a really interesting part of the game. So if you're on this list and I say, and I call you jank, please don't take offense. It's more of a term of admiration than anything else. But I had a really quick look through some of the fleets that people were playing in this World Cup. And I kind of pulled out a bunch of them that kind of popped out to me that were, I don't know, maybe this is a discussion as to, you know, is this jank or is this just a smart way of playing it? So off the top here, I mean, obviously we've got Louis Andre's, and we've talked about yours and your experience, and it's worked out for you. We've got Tevaranta in Pod Death Watch, and Tevaranta has got a 7 activation list, Akbar, and they've got CR90s, just CR90, 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 and then a naked GR. So six TRC CR90s, a GR75, and then just Shara and Tycho. Anytime I see photocopied fleets throughout a list, I start thinking, okay, this feels a little janky, I guess. It feels like you're really kind of leaning into something, and the CR90 is never been something that I've associated with Akbar, but I know it can be done. And obviously, like Tevaranta made it out of the pod there in the Swiss. They have finished, I don't know if they finished all their games actually, or if they still have a game outstanding, but it did pretty well. So this list here, what do you guys think?
In my point of view, it's a very good way to play Akbar. And I personally build a 6 activation, 6 tier, CRC Corvette like that, and it it was super strong and super fun to play. And it was before the 1.5, so it was kind of a little bit better there at that time when there was no pass token because of the huge advantage of the multiple activation. But when you have something like that, you can throw a lot of little attack that almost nullify the advantage of a brace. So it's super strong, and it's you almost have to nav all the time, but it's super easy to just put your ship at the good distance where your opponent gonna have to move inside your dead box, and it's super good. Yeah.
Actually, I just found Tevaranta. They looks like they finished about 11. Not all the games in the Swiss are finished, but from the games that are finished, they're at 11th. So they did very, very well with this list. I've got one of your podmates on here, Louis. Geek19 with the Leia list, with all the nebs. I mean, okay, is Leia, like, obviously when you think of Constantine, you think, okay, this has got to be some sort of janky fleet, because otherwise what kind of crazy person would bring Constantine? Is Leia in that same kind of category?
I never was able to make Leia work. It's like I don't understand her perfectly, and I have a lot of respect for everyone who's playing Leia because of that. And even if I don't consider, and sorry, Geek, if I don't consider this list as a very good competitive one, it can be very strong and very impressive. And if we remember, he had to face Unbound in the pod phase, and he was able to destroy the Hawk with all that little attack. So he kind of reproved how it can be super strong. So that's a list that can be super fun, super different to play, and it's fit perfectly with Geek, but it's a list that I don't perfectly understand, and it's still pretty cool.
I'm still waiting for the Geek 19 VWC victory parade. I'm hoping it's going to happen one of these days, but we'll see. What about, so there is a player in Podchiss, Josh BB or Josh B88. He didn't make it into the Swiss, but he had a 6 consular Anakin list. Again, you know, a spam list with a commander that kind of would lean into that MSU. But he's got like clone nav officer, die caps, and he's got a 14 point bid on this thing. Is this?
Yeah.
Like, where does this sit? Yeah.
I don't know. It's consular, not the red one. I don't know how a bunch of little ship meant to be close, medium close, can be that good. I think it can be very fun to play because that kind of thing is just pure lot of pleasure. But competitive, I don't know. I really don't know, and I really don't care. No, sorry.
he's got 5 C70s, so he's got 5 of the long range ones, just
oh,
one
oh
arm,
oh
so.
Okay, okay. Oh, yeah. Okay, so sorry, I wanted to say I really don't know, not don't care. So in that situation, yes, it can be very very more interesting, because I think it's how the new Anakin have to be played with a bunch of MSU and perhaps also the great Implacab. Implacab is just so cool. I reconnect with Acclamator because of that title. And yeah. Wow, what a great way to play. To play a guard list, and to come back to the list with Anakin, I think it was something that missed the Republic, so it's a good I think it's a very good way to use Anakin. Maybe, perhaps not that much competitive, but still very interesting.
Yes, yeah, yeah. And what you said earlier about, you know, whenever there's a change comes out, you're looking at probably about a year to really, you know, usually kind of get to the yeah. suss out the intricacies and the nuances and stuff. So yeah. we're only about 6 months into new mm-hmm. Anakin.
And also, we have to say that we don't see him that much. So it's like people don't really want to try it more than that and focus on something else instead of him. So perhaps in some month people will gain interest more in him. Maybe I do. Maybe I do.
I know. I think you got something with your Obi-Wan going on there, but like new Anakin was almost half of the 40% of the Republic fleets in the VWC was Anakin. And I think there's an Anakin Eldred in about eighth with new Anakin. So there's definitely people trying it, it's still early days and it's going to be interesting to see how that kind of plays out. I got one more I kind of want to look at. And again, it's another Leia one and unintentionally, but this is PT-106, Paul, who I had the good fortune to meet in person at in Montreal, but he has got a Leia. He's got a Rebel Providence and a GR-75 combat refit, among other things. CR-90A, a Pelta Assault, a Nebulon B with Ox Shield Team Squad batteries, and then again just Shara and Gold Squadron. Paul's been known to do some interesting things. I think it was last VWC he had like that pocket Star Destroyer in the Victory Star Destroyer that was kind of like a mini Simoon almost. So he's been doing some interesting things. What do you think of that list?
It's unusual for Paul for sure, and I saw him playing it, and it was pretty interesting and a huge potential. But still, it's a list that have to be masterized after a lot of game. I think it's I don't know at which point it can be very competitive, and. I also don't see that much why Leia there instead of something else. But I saw one game where I don't remember that much what he was playing against, but the round, I arrived in round 3 or something like that, and the Providence was like almost on the edge of the opponent at only round 3, something like that. It was so amazing to see the Providence that close, that far from the beginning point. So it was pretty cool the way he was playing it. It was very different from the other kind of list that we normally see Paul playing, is a super waggy style. And so I think it's the reason why he didn't perform that well. It was like getting out of his comfort zone, perhaps more for the fun of playing something different for once. But it's a list to enjoy the game at another level.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think the engine techs probably helped get him across the board like that. But I mean, to be fair, he's roughly in the 20s somewhere right now. So he did okay. He got out of the pods better than I did. And yeah, it's always neat to see what Paul brings though. And the last one I kind of picked out was Plausian, and they had it was a Dooku fleet. It had some Phylons in it for some extra speed control and sort of raid buffing, because you can take away their tokens. I'm not sure if that's jank per se, or if that's just leaning hard into one aspect of what Dooku brings to the table. What do you think?
I really like the way Dooku fit with a double film like that, because he have a super tanky Providence and the usual Patriot Fist to finish stuff up, it's like you just go straight to the opponent by slowing down at maximum and forcing him to not being able to do navigation with Dooku raid, and it really seems to be effective because Minilis can deal against something like that, like a speedy MC-80 can do anything against that. It just gets stuck there, and that's it. You're gonna have to receive a lot of attack, and it's I believe it's a very good list to beat large target. Maybe not that's super good against MSU list, but in many kind of situation, it can be a very interesting, interesting and powerful list. Yeah. What is the placement of
Placement, I think right now is round about Paul. Actually, I got them at 22 and Paul at 21, but again, like there's still a handful of games that haven't been played. I'm not sure, like when you get to this end of the Swiss and the finals are already getting started, you know, people sometimes just they lose interest or time, you know, the time commitment for this tournament is huge. So I don't know if those games will end up getting played or not, but as it stands right now, that's 21st for Paul and 22nd for Plausian.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean any last words or bits of advice or sagely wisdom on jank or your jank or playing jank in specific?
I think that it's worth the effort to try to take something and to bring it to the table, even if it's considered to be a very bad list, because I try to build something with Draven, and I really dislike Draven, but I do really like the list I built. It was a Starhawk with the MC-30, a slicer tool, and a little comnet or something like that, and some squadron to back up stuff. And wow, it was so cool to have a good control here and there like that, and just the kind of super great game with a lot of stress, because playing Hawk without Agate, it's like you offer the possibility to your opponent to finally beat a goddamn Hawk. Otherwise, with Agate, it's like, okay, I kill the stuff around and just fuck up.
Run away.
But now it's yes.
Oh, I was gonna ask you if Draven was next on your list, but you just answered.
Ah, man, I wish, but oh man, it was such a timing phase, a bad timing process in all the way you work, that I could not understand the perfect timing for all his action. And No. I tried to. I may focus more on perhaps Kraken. The Kraken, CIS Kraken. I built one cool list. Yeah, Kraken is also one of that we don't see that much. But in fact, it's more a question of K, because I like Konstantin, Kenobi, yes. And I have to
Kraken.
Yeah, Kraken is next.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Kraken's my go-to these days, and I'm really enjoying it. I mean, I kind of started when I started in the game. I started playing Screed with, because it was just that ability for Screed anyway to set that hit crit and get my special thing off, and I'm enjoying Kraken. But yeah, it's definitely, you know, obviously I've got to raise my skill level to really make it consistently work well. Mm. You know, that maneuver game is so important in that list.
Indeed.
And yeah, I don't know if they're going to change his name, but I mean, if they did, you could maybe get Craven in there too. So we'll see. So yeah, I mean, let's take a look now at what's gone on in the VWC. So we weren't here last year. We're going to do a quick, cause it's getting late here. So we'll do a quick run through round three and round four, and take a quick look at the finals. So going into round three, this is a couple of weeks back. So, we had Outbound Flight, Truthiness, Maki, and Kalorn all on top with 17 points. In Rob We Trust, Stu Bucket, Backseat Admiral all tied at 15. Garrett, Aresius, Paul Heaver, and Argentium at 14. And then Sam, Angry Ewok, friend of the podcast, Louis Andre, Mako, Patrick, and Arc Welder all on 13. So everybody's still in the mix there, and there's a good chunk of people in that bubble. In round three, Kaloran got his first loss of the Swiss to Outbound Flight, 207 to 267, which was barely a 7-4 for OBF. Maki came up with a strong showing against Truthiness and got an 8-3. Garrett bounced back from a round two loss to take an 8-3 win over In Rob We Trust. Stu Bucket continued his role, taking a match against Backseat Admiral 8-3. Aresius got a 7-4 over Maki. Paul Heaver and Argentium played a close 6-5, only 16 MOV going in Paul Heaver's favor. Louis Andre's dark horse run continued. You downed Sam 7-4. And Patrick dropped a tough match, 8-3 against Elred. And Arc Welder put an end to Angry Ewok's hopes with a 10-1 win. At the end of round three, we were looking at Maki alone on top at 25, Outbound Flight with 24, Arc Welder and Stu Bucket on 23, Garrett at 22, Aresius and Kaloran on 21, and then Truthiness, Elred, Paul Heaver, Louis Andre all on 20, still all in the mix there. But by the time you get into round four, those four on the bottom there were really needed a big result to make a move up into the top four. So round four, Elred came up with a win over Spike, but only 7-4, not enough to lift him up into the top four. Argentum finished strong with a 400 to 197 turn three tabling of Sackett 26. But the early end of that match meant that the contested outpost points were left on the table. And Argentum ends up finishing the World Cup just outside the top four. That hurts. I mean, I wasn't even there, but I feel your pain. I'm sorry, Argentum. Arc Welder got a 7-4 win over Stu Bucket. Truthiness was 8-3 over Paul Heaver. Maki ended up with a perfect 4-0 in the Swift with a 8-3 win over Outbound Flight. Garrett got past Aresius 6-5. I want to give a special mention. We mentioned PT106. Paul, he's got a Combat GR75. In Paul's last game, is playing Rimson. The last shot of the game was 2 damage from this Combat GR75 that destroyed Rimson's last hard sell, which turned it into a mutual tabling. GR75 Combat Refits. OP. Please nerf. But I think, as exciting as that is, I don't even know what to say about this. Louis Andre, your last match of the Swiss against Kaloran. Shameful, shameful game. Another COG 6-5-0 MOV game. I don't even know what to say. But it's more to this one than meets the eye, isn't there? Because you scored 410 victory points to Kaloran's 400. But Kaloran got the table on you, and so Kaloran won, even though you had more victory points. I don't think I've ever seen that before.
Yeah, that was that wasn't the situation I was super happy about it, but the situation was kind of perfect also, because it was such an epic game, and Kaloran did a little bad luck move with his Onager and end up in range of my close range with my targeting Stramblers, so I could manage to make him reroll many of his good roll, and it was kind of otherwise I think he could have beat me way more than that. So I think all that around the result was kind of okay, but otherwise I would have win 9-2 if he would not have beat my ISD like that with his last shot of the demo at the round 6. it was such a perfect ending for him, to be fair. His last hope going straight like that with a nav and cracking his rack and having almost the perfect result to blow me at 0 or left. So yeah, I think it was a very good moment for him. And to be fair, it was a very good ending for the Vassal World Cup So
that was, I mean, that you know, like as you described there, that kind of storyline, the last roll of the last turn of the last game. Mm-hmm. You know, well, I feel for you, because that's a heartbreaking way to end. But any game where there's like over, you know, 800 victory points evenly split, I mean, that's got to be an amazing game.
It truly was, because playing against Zerkog, it's a very great, very huge challenge in administration. You have to come there with a plan, and you have to deal with a super amount of good damage. And I kind of was able to do the job, and he had a gut shot with the first shot of the other girl, so I was a little bit pissed about that, because it's like almost the same. It's always like that for me while facing another girl. It's the first shot is super, super good, super strong, and I never play ECM, so I can't use my brace, and that just always remove a lot of joy. But then after that, the game became super tense, and you know, when the stress is at the peak and the maximum like that, it's where you know that it's a very, very good game. And Keylord was a great gentleman all through all that game, and and it was seriously a perfect game. So I cannot expect better result than that, to be fair.
It's really hard when you take that haymaker kind of thing first off, and all of a sudden you're kind of on the back foot and then trying to fight from behind almost. I mean, that's hard for anybody to do, let alone at like, you know, when the stakes are high like that. That ended the Swiss. I mean, like I said, there's still a few games to be played, but as far as who's moving on to the final, that is set. There's no player in the final this year that was seeded higher than 25th in the Swiss. Only two of the top 10 were under 20. So I found that was an interesting stat. Take it with a grain of salt, because we all know with the pod format, the points you get out of the pod don't necessarily reflect how hard or easy it was, or not necessarily that. What am I trying to say? Like how skilled or how good of a player you are necessarily, because especially this year of all years, the pods were so competitive. I mean, last year, for example, the top four were all seated higher than this year's top seat. Half of them were seated under 20, and the top seed in this year's final is Maki, who was seated 25th. Maki, my former pod mate, first in Pod Rodian. Maki had a 5-6-9 record in the pod, 8-9-8-8 in the Swiss. Maki was 47th overall in last year's VWC, but has been doing really good this year. Fifth in the GSG, second LVO. He's got a Bale fleet with Ventoux, Mercy Mission, a couple of consulars, and a BTL squad ball 9-point bid. Second, we've got Arc Welder, who was first in pod Nemodian, 9-5-6 in the pod, 7-6-10-7 in the Swiss. This is Arc Welder's first VWC. He's been doing pretty good at real life tournaments, though. Was first at the Dork Den Store Championship, fourth at GSG, and Arc Welder's flying a zero bid Sloan fleet. Truthiness is back in the finals. First in pod Bothan, 4-9-7 in the pods, 8-9-3-8 in the Swiss. Truthy was 46th overall last year, but 4th in 2021. He won the PAX U World Open Qualifier this year. He's playing a Dooku fleet with rec support, a couple hard sell, a couple gauze, and a squad ball that includes Bactoid, which you don't see that often. And last in the final, 4th in the final, is Garrett. He was first in pod Kaminoan, 7-6-7 in the pods, 10-4-8-6 in the Swiss. Garrett was 4th last year, 7th in 2022, and 9th in 2021. So he's been climbing steadily up the rankings for the past 3 years, hoping to make that last jump into first place and win the whole darn thing. And he is playing a Moff Jerry Kuat Quasar Gauze combo with some Interceptors, Jenden Merrick Invader, and Hondo, 4-point bid. Heartbreak Hotel, though, for Outbound Flight, Argentum, Stu Bucket, Elred, all just 1 point out of the final. Special mention goes to Stu Bucket, top Rebel. He was second in Pod Togruta and winds up sixth overall. Elred finishes first in Pod Umbran and eighth overall with New Anakin. Way to go. Your finals got people from four different time zones all across North America and Central Europe. And as of recording time, we've got a handful of games scheduled. Tuesday, 7 p.m. Central is Arcwelder versus Maki. Wednesday, 8 p.m. Eastern, Maki versus Truthy. It's going to be a rematch from the Swiss where Maki won 8-3. And on the weekend, we've got Maki and Garrett and Truthy versus Arc tentatively scheduled. And stay tuned to the Armada Hub for the rest of the games and try to catch them if you can. This is going to be some top, top, top level gaming. Quick big thanks to people, and this is not an exhaustive list, obviously, but especially Mercier and the Mercury Fleet Command, who have been recording and posting matches on VWC or on YouTube. I think Louis-André, your match with Kalorn is on there, if I'm right.
Yes.
And people who've been streaming matches, people who've been saving vlogs and stuff, thank you so much for those of us who can't always catch the matches and be there at game time. It's much appreciated. I haven't looked at that game, the Louis-André Kalorn game yet, but it's on my to watch list when I got a free moment. Not to rub it in. I'm sorry. I know it was a heartbreaker, but it just sounds epic. I got to see how it plays.
Yeah, it's just a lot of fun to watch. You can feel the stress all the way, and I think it's an amazing game, no matter what the result is. And to conclude, I really want to say that I'm super impressed of the skill that all the player reach through all the time all the years I participate to the Vassal World Cup, because many player became way better than 1 or 2 years ago, and it bring the competitive level at a state that it's very harder and harder every year. So that's a lot of fun to arrive in that tournament and stress to perform well against the very, very beginning. And that's very impressive that a community grow up like that. And yeah, thanks a lot, everyone.
Yes, thanks. And thank you, Louis-André, for joining us. Yeah, it was great talking to you about Jank and so on. And
yeah, thanks, guy. It was very cool to talk about it. Finally.
Right on. I think that's the end of episode 7, season 2 of Foden Bead. I'm going to say that and then leave a moment for these guys to see if they had anything else they wanted to add. Look at that silence. Okay. This has been great tonight. I'm looking forward to hearing about it and talking about it tomorrow. And we will be back next week with more Vassal World Cup content. Have a great night, and may the Force be with you.
Thanks for listening to the Food and Beat Show. If you have any feedback, feel free to reach out by email or Discord. Listen again next week for more Vassal World Cup commentary.